Do you need your weekly comedy fix? Relax while we visit the sitcoms you love, the jokes you remember, the characters you will never forget, and the stars that bring them to you. Sit back. It's the Laugh Track with Jerry Strauss.
Yo, 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 and hello again, everyone. Welcome to the Laugh Track with Jerry Strauss. He is I am him, and we are so happy to be back for season two of this show. Can't wait. We've got quite a ride ahead of us with some big things planned. We're so excited that you're here. For those of you checking out the show for the very first time, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for doing so. Of course, again, my name is Jerry Strauss, and I'm a lifelong TV geek. I've done things in journalism and podcasting, and none of that matters because the most important thing here is that I love TV comedy, and we are here to dive into some of your favorite TV comedies from the past, the present, from the future even. Yeah, we're traveling in time. Not really. But definitely we're going to cover all your favorites. We've already delved into a lot of really cool shows in season one, and we urge you to catch up. If you have not yet done so, you can find all of our old episodes on your favorite podcast provider or at our official website, laughtrackpod.com. We had conversations last season with everyone from Jason Alexander from Seinfeld to Amanda Burse from Married with Children, Jody Sweetin and Andrea Barber from Full House and Fuller House, a bunch of people from Friends. We had Amina Kaplan from The Office, Parks and Rec, Jim O'Hare was on the show. The entire cast of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was here, and so many more. Too many for me to count. Heck, too many for me to remember, but they're all there at laughtrackpod.com. And we are kicking things off in a really, really big way this season as well. As you may know, the top comedy on broadcast TV these days, last year, this year, yeah, we're talking about The Conners. But in my opinion, this show is so much more than that. This is a comedic legacy that dates all the way back to Roseanne, which reigned supreme at the top of the ratings for years back in the day. A 20-year layoff and right back in action. The last few years, the Conner family, like they've never left, have been back on our TV screens, making us laugh. What a great cast. And we get to talk to one of them today, an OG member of the Conner family, Michael Fishman, who plays DJ Conner. He's been doing it since he was 6 years old. And not only has he been doing that in front of the screen, in front of the cameras, I should say, for all this time, but this week, yeah, he's jumping behind the cameras. He's the director of this year's Halloween episode, which if you know Roseanne, if you know the Conners, always a classic, not only for the show, but for TV in general, a can't miss episode. And we're going to talk to the guy behind it all, the guy who has taken the helm for this week of this classic show. And we're talking about all things Conners, all things DJ, and what has become of his character and where the Conners fit in today's COVID influenced world and in today's political landscape and everything else. Not to get too deep, not to get too heavy, but we do get deep. We do get heavy, but we have a lot of laughs as well. This is a great conversation with a really cool dude. So if you're getting ready to watch the Conners this week, before you do, check out this conversation with Michael Fishman from the Conners right here on the Laugh Track.
It's good to talk to you, and it's so good to talk to you now and here, because I feel like this moment in time is like another peak in the importance of the Conners. You know, it's been such a big part of our culture, you know, going back to Roseanne, the original iteration, but now I feel like it's a show that's going to kind of speak to everything that we're going through now, and we had the season premiere this week. And I think you guys are probably already feeling the feedback from that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. You know, the Conners story, I think, resonates with people in such a personal way. And all the stuff that's going on in the country is really impactful. So to have a family that has the normal struggles that so many families have, and then to add in all of the different things this year that 2020 has kind of thrown at humanity as a whole, the Connors are kind of iconically perfect to embody a lot of that. For me, for DJ, you know, DJ and Mary storylines, I don't think have ever been more relevant as well. You know, diving into what it's like with all of the social political issues on top of all of the pandemic stuff, and then just the normal day-to-day of being a family that doesn't have a lot of money, it's quite a combination. And, you know, we're well suited to tackle these topics.
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, it's a legacy of a show that that always has been perfectly suited to kind of speak to so many of the things that we deal with all the time. We want to take it all the way back to the now, because we're getting ready to experience an episode that's really cool for you, really personal for you, because of your involvement as a director. But before we do that, let's take a step back. I want to kind of go back to the beginning a little bit with you, because a lot of people know you so well, but they don't necessarily know the whole story. You landed the role of DJ Connor when you were just 6 years old. Is that right?
Yeah, I started just really the first thing I've ever done.
Unbelievable. Is that something that, you know, as far as your entry into show business, was that very much something that you were pursuing, or, you know, as a child actor, or even more into the future? Or was it more something that just kind of came up?
Well, you know, my sister wanted to earn money for college, so she wanted to act. And my parents both worked full time, so they wanted us to maybe do the occasional commercial because they could rearrange a day or two, but they didn't want us to do anything long term. And I started going with her, and she started auditioning, and I said, I'd like to try this too. And it was 1988, and there was a writer's strike, so there was literally no work. And the audition for Roseanne came up, and they wanted somebody with experience, and I had none. And my agent said, he'll never get it, so don't worry. Just take him, because it'd be a good experience. And 9 years later, you know, it was a whirlwind of beautiful, just synchronistic and fortunate experiences.
It's really interesting, because I think one of the cool things about you and your performance as DJ, even that young, is the fact that you didn't come off like a child actor, so to speak. You came off as a genuine six-year-old kid, or however old DJ was supposed to be. And I think your lack of experience probably was beneficial to that.
I think a big thing for us, I think on our show in particular, is being authentic. So we always talk about lines and wording and phrases and things that are relevant to what's going on in the world, but also that are somewhat organic to the time, space, and who we are. So I think using and adapting what we are fits into making the Connors feel more authentic. And I think as a kid, I think I wasn't afraid to dive in, and I was really willing for the big moments. And I think that's one of those things you can't really prepare somebody for.
You know, it's funny, and we're gonna ask about what, you know, some of your favorite memories in a little while, but I remember specifically, I think still my favorite scene ever from the original Roseanne. And I don't remember the context, haven't had a chance to look it up, but I just remember this one scene on its own very perfectly. There was some sort of argument, some sort of drama in the kitchen, the smoke clears, everybody's gone, and it's just you sitting at the table, and it's just, aren't you supposed to be at school? Go to school. And you're just sitting there, and it's just like a random weekday, and nobody realized that you were supposed to be going to school. You were just going to kind of sit there and ride it out. And I love that, because as a kid or a teenager, or however old I was when I saw it, I was like, oh man, that's funny, because, you know, the parents are kind of slack there. But as an adult and a parent, I'm like, yeah, that could happen absolutely any day of the week.
Yeah. And it's funny. I think we always had such great writers, and we had a lot of writers who had kids. And I think, you know, things that are very personal and real, you know, we didn't go for a quick, easy joke. We usually went for something that was more grounded in reality. And I think that's what really resonated with audiences.
Mm-hmm. Do you have clear memories? I mean, I know you worked on the original show from that age of 6 years old into your teens, into about 15 years old or so. But are there parts of that that you remember very clearly versus other years where maybe you don't, just because of your age or because you had other things going on growing up?
You know, it's funny. A lot of my earliest memories are work, and I remember so many things so vividly. I think because it was my whole world in so many ways, and it was such a fantastic place to be and an exciting thing, and there was so much going on. I kind of was the little sponge that took in everything, even, you know, even when people didn't think I was paying attention, I kind of was always paying attention, and I was always engaged in the crew and what the crew was doing and learning from all of the different departments. And that has been such an eye-opening and empowering thing throughout the rest of my career.
Yeah. And obviously you've gone on to do so many things in show business in front of and behind the camera. When the show comes to an end now, you're on this amazing high because the show is basically the top comedy on television for a long time. Finally, its time has come. Where does that leave you emotionally? How did you feel about it at the time?
When the original show ended?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, when the original show ended, I was devastated because you can't prepare, you know, that was my whole world. Those were the people that I loved. That was my safe harbor. That was, you know, in so many ways, the place I wanted to be and the place of joy for me. And I love then what I got to do, and I still love it now. I think that's one of the things that resonates with audience members and fans and people who communicate with me is I love what we get to do. I picked this job and this business and worked really hard to work my way back, because when this show ended, all the people that I loved, I didn't get to see, and everybody has to go off and get another job, and we're scattered in a million different directions, which is what happens when every production ends. Mm-hmm. But for a kid who had built these relationships and really took interest in everyone, it meant that I lost that support structure. So it was really a hard transition. And, you know, going back to public school every day and dealing with normal age appropriate things, you know, I was used to people having really serious problems, like having to make their mortgage and pay for their kids to go to college. And, you know, my perspective was different. So some of the things that people thought were a big deal, I realized kind of weren't. So I was kind of an old man in a young man's body in some ways. And, you know, you kind of have to find yourself again in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. That's got to be a tough trend, especially at that age, because everyone at that age is trying to figure out who they are and what life is. And now you've already got kind of a different version of it that you've lived through already.
Yeah. I moved around a lot. You know, I had such a complex teenage years because I really knew what I wanted to do. But I think for my family, not being from this business, their expectation was, you know, it's kind of time to get a real job and to do normal life from here on out. And I secretly knew I wanted to act for the rest of my life and wanted to write and produce and direct at some point. So it was this battle of trying to, I think most kids go through this phase where you're coming of age, you're finding yourself, but you also have to stop at some point defining your life by what everybody else wants for you.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big part of it, is really deciding who it is and what I wanted. Mm-hmm.
And it's almost in the same way, I think a lot of people go through a process where they're almost trying to play both sides. They're trying to work their way back, but they're trying to do it in a way where you can kind of prove to those around you that this is a safe, viable way to do things, which isn't necessarily the most direct path. What was your path immediately following Roseanne? What were the next steps for you?
So I did a bunch of jobs. I worked on Seinfeld. I did a show called Hits with Andrew Dice Clay and Reno Wilson, which really was empowering for me. And Reno and I are still friends. And that was a great experience working with Andrew Dice Clay. And then I did Walker, Texas Ranger, and got to do some action and do a knife fight with Chuck Norris.
Nice.
And then I did, I worked a couple days on AI, which was a great film with Steven Spielberg. But we knew at the time that a lot of it was probably going to get cut because they just had so much movie.
Right.
And, you know, then I kind of was transitioning, and I was raising my little brother, and I stepped in to help there, and I met someone, and we decided to get married since we're already kind of taking care of a kid, and I had a kid really early. Mm-hmm. And then it was a very interesting thing. I think the business saw that as maybe me acting out or getting ready to spin out. And for me, I was really happy. It was a really supportive situation. And I think for some people that kind of, I was in that weird space anywhere where you're not quite an adult. So you still need a teacher and all these things, and there's limitations on your hours, but you don't look old enough to like be an adult, but you're not young enough to be a kid. So they end up hiring a lot of young looking adults. So it's a tough transition time anyway. And for me, I really kind of went behind the scenes. And then I worked on Roseanne's talk show. I did kind of planned segments, and I did a lot of the pre-interviews. And then we may have been the first network show to run a live chat room and a live phone calls while doing a live talk show.
Oh, wow.
And my job was to interface all of that at the same time. So I had phone calls and producers in one ear and, you know, behind the scenes stuff in the other ear. And then I had to interact with her. And then I had a chat room going in front of me. It was a great multitaskers job. And then I kind of dove behind the scenes when my kids were little, because I really wanted my kids to kind of have a little more of a normal life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want them to be known as my kids. I wanted them to have kind of their own identity. And then as I moved behind the scenes, the transition to coming back was harder.
Yeah. Yeah. You mean coming back to being in front of the camera again?
Yeah. And really getting consistent work. I mean, it's one of those things, you really have to earn your way in anything. You know, people know you for what you do. So if they have one concept of you in any field, I think this is true for everybody, to make that jump or to transition to something else, you really have to distinguish yourself or get the right opportunity.
Do you, I want to go back to something really quickly that you said before about how the business was sort of waiting for you or expecting you to spin out. Did you feel like maybe there was just an expectation that people in your position, your age, more often than not, they just, you know, they end up on the cover of the Inquirer. They end up, you know, at this stage of the game on TMZ, just acting wild. Like that's the natural path to go. Obviously you didn't go that way, thankfully, but is that kind of what people just assumed you would do because of how high you had been and, you know, the success that you had so early?
Well, I think it's one of those things when you work in this business, you're in an adult world as a kid. So you see things that most kids don't see. You grow up a little faster, but life, and it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, if you were a star athlete at a high school, or you were somebody who was really gifted in science or math, you know, anytime you get a lot of attention, you get a lot of access. And when you have access, you get choice. And I think that's the part that people don't realize. And I think really what it is, in my opinion, whether it be fame or attention or money, any of those things, what they really are is magnifiers for who you are. And so what happens is you have more access. And if you're going to be a kind person, you'll do bigger, kinder things. If you're kind of being wild and experimenting, you're going to do more of that. And if you're not a nice person, then you're going to do some really big, not nice things because you'll have access. So I think it reveals you more than it defines you, but life is all about choices. I think anybody who has ever made mistakes can tell you that. And I've made plenty of mistakes in my life. I'm just lucky that none of them really were life altering.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, things come around, and certainly you were ready for it. But I mean, would you ever have expected, after 20 years, after everything that you did coming in and out of the business, that you would have an opportunity, that this opportunity would present itself for this entire family behind the Conners to reunite in front of and behind the scenes?
Well, for me, I was working my way back into this. So I thought it was going to take me longer, honestly. And then this kind of sped everything up. But I also secretly, having worked so much and spent so much time with Roseanne, we had spent years talking about where we thought characters would be and all these things. I think it happened earlier than we thought, but I knew for Roseanne and I knew for me that there was always some unfinished business there, some stories that could still be told. And the question was if we would be able to get everyone, like you said, and it just kind of came about so quickly and organically, and Sarah really put things together. And it's such a gift to get to work with people who really get each other, who have history. And for an audience to be able to share 30 years of history, it's one of the things that is exciting about this job is we can cover topics that other shows could never dare to, because we have some built-in kind of cachet or equity with our fans, right? You understand that we don't have bad intentions when we say certain things, or you understand where we're coming from and where this character grew from. So you're willing to give them a bigger, deeper chance and hear them out.
Okay, guys, quick time out here from this fantastic conversation. I'm having a lot of fun, but let's talk about something that is super important. A great organization, No Kid Hungry, is a campaign that is helping kids remain fed each and every day, even when school is not in session. So take a listen to this message and get to know No Kid Hungry.
Because of the coronavirus, schools have closed nationwide, and kids in need are missing nearly 34 million school meals every day. For many, it's the only healthy food they might get in a given day. No Kid Hungry has a plan to feed these kids, but they need your help. Donate now at nokidhungry.org to help feed America's children during this crisis and in the months to come. That's nokidhungry.org. Thanks.
I see a lot of people who write about the show and review the show and kind of look at it kind of as its own thing, the Connors, I'm saying, separate from Roseanne and separate from, you know, the original idea of the reboot. To me, it's all one show. You just took a 20-year break. I mean, that's the way I look at it creatively. I think it's probably the TV comedy with maybe the greatest legacy, if you will, in sitcom history, because it covers, like you said, such topical ground over such a long period of time, and always then and now, so relevant. Like, such a cool thing to be able to bring back and come back to. So no reservations at all about when this thing becomes reality and it's real and it's a thing that you can possibly do. You're all in from the get-go?
Well, it's funny. It's dangerous to go back to something like that as actors if you've been kind of typecast in that way. But that's the uniqueness of this show and our audience. We have the most amazing fans who have always supported us. And this show provides you an opportunity to do really significant, serious topics, to do really heartfelt moments on top of doing great comedy. So in many ways, it's almost a perfect job. So there's no reason to really hesitate. You know, you get a chance to do it all. And that's what every actor dreams of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. It's so fun to watch, as you alluded to, characters that we already know so well, we're invested in, we're so familiar with, and just to kind of continue that story and see where they go next. For you, behind the scenes, you talked about the close relationship that you had with everyone on the show. Did it feel a little weird to come back and just be among everyone and sort of the same, you know, the same set, essentially the same situation, except now you're not a kid anymore. Now you're not a teenager anymore. Now you're an adult peer with people like John Goodman, with Laurie Metcalf. Like, does it feel different, or does it feel like no matter what, you kind of feel like the kid of the group?
Well, it's interesting. On and off screen, you know, my character and me as a person have probably gone through the biggest transition, right? Because when I left, I was still a teenager, so I was still essentially a kid. To come back as an adult who's had this whole life away from everyone, you know, I kept in contact with everybody, and I was kind of the one person who kept everybody together in a sense and communicated with everybody. So I didn't have a gap really in communication. So they all kind of knew bits and pieces, but it's a totally different thing going from the kid looking up at everybody to being one of the biggest physically people. You know, I remember John and I had a scene where we kind of had a fight when the show first came back, and they actually had to get rid of it because we were both so big and powerful. It was like overwhelming and kind of explosive in a way that they didn't think people were ready for. So, you know, there's some of that is, you know, my life experience is so different than I think what people anticipate. And then DJ has changed so much. You know, I had to bring so many different elements to DJ because where other people could fall back into characters or try to find back into them, I have to build this character based on new information, but bring in a familiar tone and a heart from my childhood. And that was a really interesting dynamic to kind of find that authentic, heartfelt kind of innocence that DJ has, but combine that with now being an adult and being a parent and a veteran.
Yeah.
You know, that's it's a hard task. I think, you know, we walked that line really hard when we first came back and kind of into that first season. And I love that. I think, you know, the military stories are really personal for me because my family, I have a military family. Mm-hmm. So for me to kind of dive into that, you know, I'd love to cover some more of kind of the PTSD that we mentioned early on and that transition back. But then also I was gifted so many beautiful gifts in my character of marrying Gina Williams, who was the girl he didn't want to kiss, and being in an interracial marriage and having a biracial child, and all of these really deep topics that are socially conscious and such a part of our fabric of the world now. You know, DJ's a story, I think he's got a story that you could go almost any direction you want. So every week I just kind of smile and look for the opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. I think that you hit the nail right on the head. I think out of all the characters, and everyone has interesting stories, like everyone has been to interesting places character wise over the last 20 years. But for DJ, I love the fact, as you said, this whole crazy life that was essentially invented for this point of time. It was never really alluded to in the original series, but we kind of had to fill in those gaps with this beautifully crafted 20 years, this past that he had. But when DJ comes home, to your point, you're still DJ, part of the Connors. And that's how everybody clearly still treats you and remembers you. And it kind of speaks to the fact that the Connor house is almost like a safe house, if you will. Like everyone's got all this craziness in their lives, but inevitably everyone in this family is welcome back home. And finds their way back to that family dynamic. And that, to me, is the real heart of the show.
Yeah, I agree. And for DJ, you know, what it was like transitioning back to civilian life, knowing that the military didn't want him, but not being so angry that it turns people off, and to try and honor our veterans in a way of trying to be very authentic and open-hearted and still be a loving dad, you know, and to get to play a loving husband and have a good marriage, you know, that's such a gift. You know, Maya Lynn Robinson, who came in as Gina, we connected in such an amazing way. It's a shame that a lot of our best work, kind of because of time constraints, didn't make it on the air, but there were so many great moments, you know, and I think that's something that we could expand on or see in the future. You know, DJ has a lot of open ground to cover, and you'll see Halloween, there's a story that's definitely a little different. You're going to see a little different scenario with DJ and Mary.
Well, it's a very different season and a very different year for all of us. Let's talk about this. Now, we're back for the Connors. You guys were among, to my understanding, among the first shows to go back to work, to start creating content again for us. Thankfully, because I think the world kind of needs the Connors. What was it like? I mean, as far as you know, as a person, as someone who was kind of stepping into this unfamiliar territory of trying to do this thing as safely as possible, what was the feeling like with all of you coming back and trying to kind of fight your way through the challenges that social distancing and everything else has created for you?
You know, I think the hardest part first coming back in a COVID world is not being able to connect or interact exactly in the way that we always have. You know, I've worked with some of these people literally my whole life. There's a lot of hugging that goes on. We're a really special group. Yeah. And so, especially with the crew, you know, knowing that we have to maintain distance now, I tried really hard. You know, the first week I was back, I made pins for all of our crew and I kind of wrote everybody a letter because I needed a symbol. I needed for us to be able to connect, but do it from a distance. And I think as going back to work is such a, like I said, it's always kind of been my safe place. I'm so happy when I get to work because I love what I get to do. But making sure that the crew still felt connected, that even though we couldn't hang out the same as we would at lunch or have the same closeness and we all have PPE on until it's time to record a scene, that we still understood that we were connected. So I made sure to provide something to everyone that was a symbol, something they could touch, something they could acknowledge, so they could acknowledge that I'm acknowledging you and your contribution and your heart and what you bring to this show. And at the same time, I need you to know that I'm thinking of you, and we may be 30 feet apart because of the way this situation is, but that you're still right here and I'm still with you and that we're still connected in the same way we always have been. I think that was really important. And then it's the physical part of knowing there's a little bit of threat or risk as a parent, you know, going back to work and knowing like we've been quarantining and we have to be specific here at the house. And, you know, I'm a coach of a bunch of kids, so I haven't been able to coach. So I haven't been able to have contact with my players the way I normally do because I've had to protect my work environment and my crew. It's a very different thing. And then as a director, to then bounce back and forth between the two groups was an even more almost exciting opportunity because it gave me an opportunity to interact in different ways and collaborate in different ways. It's such a blessing to go back to work because there's that familiar family feel. So I don't think I realized how much I missed that during the quarantine. You know, and the hardest part I think is Jaden and I tend to hug each other a lot because we have such a close relationship and we talk all the time on the phone and everything. So it's a little weird for us to like stand apart every once in a while in rehearsal and stuff. They have to like, hey, 6 feet. And like, sorry. We're like family. So you get to a point where you're just standing there and you're so close. And then you're like, oh yeah, wait, 6 feet.
It's like one of those old school dances where, yes, you know, the nun with the ruler, like smacking you if you get too close. Oh my goodness. It's got to be something that inevitably adds a little bit of stress to your job as well. Of course, you're worried about just making sure that everyone's as safe as can be, while at the same time trying to be loose enough to perform to the best of your ability. And the other factor, of course, no studio audience. What's that like?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's funny to everybody else, but you know, the moment somebody coughs on a set, right now, everybody has a reaction, right? And to try and kind of balance the worry and the reality. And then we're missing a big part of this show, which is the live audience, which is kind of sad for me because those people really help shape our show and they give us our timing and they're the truth, right? They don't care who the name is on the list and what order we're in on the call sheet. They only know if the lines are funny and if they believe the story. Mm-hmm. And I love that moment of truth in front of our audience. I respect them so much. And I love to play and I love to challenge and push and try things a different way and see if we can build things or make things even better and heighten them. And it's hard not having that group there. We have like a stable group that shows up all the time. And then we have all the people who come in week to week. And I think it's really special to get to share that with your audience.
Yeah, it's an energy that you can feel watching it at home, just in a similar way that you probably can. It's just conveyed very well, and it's just very genuine and authentic. And like you said, it's comedic truth. It's funny, and you can feel it. And you know, unfortunately, it's a part of the show that has to be kind of muddled through until inevitably, hopefully, we get back to that place where that can return.
What I will say in regards to that though is we've done a pretty good job of, I don't think it's changed a lot of the tone of the show, which it could for a lot of productions, but we're a veteran group. And then our crew, they're fun and they're playful. So we get some laughs from them, but they're not cheap laughs. they hold out. So we get a bit of an audience feel from them too. So I think that helps that we do get some feedback.
It feels like you guys probably spend all week just trying to refine your stuff to the point where you can just try to make those guys laugh. Like that feels like that would be the ultimate goal. Then
that is my goal every week. My goal is to make someone, you know, if I can get somebody to choke on their drink or spit something out or hold their breath, you know, and make, you know, or make them hold a laugh so hard that they, as soon as somebody else cut, they're coughing. That's like mission accomplished. If I can kind of make somebody red faced and joke about it later, that's, you know, that's a dream scenario for me.
well, look, you had a bigger opportunity than usual, even for the episode that we're going to see this week. This is pretty phenomenal because, you know, you talked before about your ambitions for directing. Now you get the helm for an episode. The second episode of the season, I'm not sure if it was filmed or if it was done in that sequence, but this is a big one because this is the Halloween episode. And if anybody is familiar with the legacy, again, of the Connors of Roseanne, Halloween episodes are right up there. I would say right up there with the Simpsons Halloween episodes as just some of the most anticipated holiday themed episodes of any sitcom ever. In any era, just year in and year out. What was the process like for you to be able to be handed the reins here? And was it a stressful one for you?
You know, I've really been trying to get the opportunity to direct here. I think it's a beautiful, synchronistic, full circle move. But, you know, I think at first, you know, people, because they've known you since you were a kid, there's a little hesitation there. And I think that's natural. When I negotiated for that this year, it was a big part of one of the reasons I came back. I want to direct because I want to have a voice, and not just here, but in the future. Representation matters for me. Inclusion matters for me. So I wanted to direct to provide this opportunity to kind of expand what I do and my impact and my ability to help and lead. And I think I want to see families that look like mine. I have a really complex, blended, mixed family that were multiracial and, you know, we've been dealing with a lot of stuff throughout, you know, the political climate that exists right now. And I want to see more of that in projects. So I write and produce towards directing for that. Coming into this, you know what? We just filmed this episode at the beginning of October. It happened really kind of last minute that we ended up being able to do Halloween. Wow. And it was on a couple days' notice. It just so worked out. It was my week, which I also find so synchronistic to have it be this iconic, really the legacy of our show, but it's also one of the most technically demanding episodes we do each year. So it's a really big measure of trust to say, okay, yeah, you should be able to handle this, right? And everybody smiles and I'm like, yeah, it's what I wanted. You know, I wouldn't have had it any other way. I love Halloween. I love our Halloweens. They're iconic. And so my job was to make sure we delivered a authentic Connors Halloween. And I think what people are going to see, the crew that I get to work with, I'm so close to them anyway, but getting to collaborate in this new way, I really was so proud of how everybody rose to the occasion. Mm-hmm. And whether it be pranks or makeup, you know, Wendy Hogan, who's always done our makeup, who does such an amazing job and has made Halloween possible for us, our wardrobe department and the costumes, and then, you know, bringing in special effects and adding all these things. I love it. You know, light and smoke and all of these things. It's not a regular week. It's the big week, and there's lots of challenges and people are coming in and coming out, and there's a lot of moving parts. And then on top of it, I had this really complex story, and Jaden Ray, who plays my daughter Mary, had probably her biggest opportunity yet. And I'm so thrilled that I got to help empower her in that way and support her through that process. I was the right guy at the right time, surrounded by all the right people.
That's awesome. And look, I think that people who listen to this show, and I think that the TV viewing world at large, for the most part, know exactly what we're talking about when we're talking about a classic Halloween episode of the Connors going back to Roseanne. But for those few who are experiencing this phenomenon this season for the very first time. What would you say is special? What sets a Halloween episode from this family apart from the rest of TV lore?
Well, in the house, we always joke that, like, we're super poor because we spend every dollar we have on Halloween. it's kind of like it is the one thing that the Connors go all out, you know, top to bottom, from our set decorating and prop departments who make our world so uniquely Halloween for this episode, to, you know, our lighting and our grips and our DP. You know, Don Morgan did a great job of choreographing all of the visuals of this. And Antonio and Tommy, you know, who run the grip and electric departments, you know, we have lights and mood and smoke. And if you, it's kind of like if you've ever seen a good haunted house and then add in the craziest costumes you've ever seen, and then there has to be some pranks and things you didn't expect. Mm-hmm. If you've never seen a Connors or Roseanne Halloween, it's a great time to come in because we did it within the framework of a COVID world. And I think I'm really proud that we get to be on the 28th for this, that we have a couple days before Halloween, because it provides us this opportunity for people to maybe imagine their own version of this and give their kids something special in a really tough year where a lot of things haven't been available.
Yeah.
And for me as a director, I wanted to keep that playful tone. I wanted the kids to love it, but I wanted some scares, some pranks, some moments. And I tried to capture everything that the writers gave us and push for a little bit more. And I really pushed all the departments to give me the best that they had within the framework of the time we had. And then, as the Connors do, is there's so many laughs layered in, but there's also two really deep storylines that are very personal that I think a lot of people will relate to in their own homes going on. I cannot wait for people to see it because it's kind of a classic episode for me.
That's great. And the, you know, we, classic is something that we all could use right now. Something that that's familiar and new all at the same time. That's the Connors to a T. And it's been great to talk to you, by the way. Thank you so much for being on the show. I want to ask you one more question before we let you go. Everyone who's a fan of Roseanne, who's a fan of the Connors, of all, just all this great television, they've got favorite episodes. They've got favorite moments. But for you, being on that soundstage, being in front of the cameras for all these years as DJ Connor, what would you say, when you look back, is your favorite moment as DJ Connor?
Well, I would say on a personal level, walking in, there's the archway from the family room, living room to the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And like so many kids growing up, all I wanted to do was be able to jump and touch the archway. So to come back as an adult and literally just be able to touch it, and like, it gives me the feel of like, man, I'm home in a weird way.
Right. And then
as a performer, I would tell you, we got to do some really important topics, and the topics that have been impactful for me for my whole life. You know, we tackled domestic violence, and we tackled, you know, the girls getting their first period. But for me, Homeward Bound was such an embarrassing but great episode of television. Mm-hmm. And then White Men Can't Kiss, really the genesis of where this storyline of where DJ is now, of meeting Gina Williams and being a kid who was uncomfortable. You know, DJ was uncomfortable because he felt like there was something different or he didn't know. To then go through this iconic transformation, which I hope people are doing in their real lives as they grow, where she's the love of his life, and his open-mindedness and his progression of his thoughts, where the ignorance of prejudice gives way to the open-mindedness of maturity and leads to really having true love and this beautiful child. I think that's the thing for me in this show, among all others, that always resonates with me and I think about all the time.
It's amazing because I think those of us who watched over the years don't even realize on a conscious level how inspiring this show truly can be, because we're too busy laughing all the time, but it's really getting the job done on so many different levels. And you've been such a big part of it and will continue to be a part of it for a long time. So, I mean, thank you so much for all the years of doing what you do. And thanks for talking to us about it. It's been great.
No, thank you for having me. I take such great pride in what we do. And I am so thankful every day for all of the fans and all of the people who support what we do and give us this opportunity.
And we're thankful right back, because the world needs, as we've said so many times already, and loves the Connors. And we're glad you're back here with us, and we can't wait to see the return of another classic, the Connors Halloween episode. It's coming up this week. We're going to see what you've done. It's going to be great, everything that you've accomplished in front of and behind the camera for this week's episode. And we're looking forward to it. So thanks a lot. Great to talk to you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right, folks. What a week it's been. Once again, on the Laugh Track, we want to let you know, of course, that the Laugh Track is produced, hosted by myself, Jerry Strauss, but of course, the lion's share of the work is done by our friend, the man pulling all the strings, Steve Prentice. And we are all over social media, so we want to make sure that you guys engage with us and follow us. We're on Twitter at Laugh Track TV. We're on Instagram at Laugh Track Pod. We are on Facebook. We've got a group and a page at Laugh Track Pod. I'm so excited. And of course, our website, our one-stop shop where you can get to all of our social media and all of our old episodes as well. Subscribe to all of the platforms where we appear. Go to our website at laughtrackpod.com, or just subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcasts, and you'll be able to hear each and every one of our episodes first. As soon as it is released, it'll be delivered right to you, so you don't even have to remember. You don't have to worry about it. Do yourself a favor, and do us a favor, too. We appreciate it when you subscribe to us. Until next time, I am Jerry Strauss. This is The Laugh Track, and we will see you next week.